Hey there. You're listening to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that formed and transformed them. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and in this episode of This Song, we'll be hearing from Matthew Murphy, aka Murph, of the British rock band The Wombats. But before we get started, I want to ask that if you like this episode, then please take a minute to go to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts and leave a rating or a review. Ratings and reviews help us a ton. They help people find us, and they make everyone on Team This Song feel really good. So thanks in advance. And now to Murph. He is the lead vocalist and guitar player for the British band The Wombats, and they've been releasing music since the early 2000s. Earlier this year, they released their fourth full-length album, Beautiful People Will Ruin Your Life. It's full of catchy power pop songs that deal with love and like catharsis and trying to figure out what it means to be an adult. And the band came through our hometown of Austin, Texas, to play the Austin City Limits Music Festival back in October. And I got to talk to Murph backstage in the KUTX tent. KUTX is the radio station in Austin, Texas, where we make this podcast. And Murph told me about a couple of songs he heard as a teenager that totally changed his musical trajectory. And just for your information, there is a little language in this episode, so if you have kids around, well, I just want to let you know that.
I used to kind of have a horrific taste in music, and I'd say the two songs that really shifted that was Radiohead Creep and Say It Ain't So, both of which I listened to at a New Year's Eve party when I was like 13 or something, and then that was it. It was all kind of alt-y, rocky world for me then. I mean, I was in like an attic in a friend's house getting drunk, playing pool and smoking Cafe Creme cigarillo things.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was really cool and kept listening to it on repeat as though it was kind of talking to me or something.
Well, I'm really interested in your taste in music before you heard these songs. What were you listening to?
Oh, my God. Happy Hardcore compilations. Like, it was really bad.
We may have, like, a cultural gulf here. I have no idea what you mean when you say Happy Hardcore.
It's like pitched up vocals with, and it's really fast. And it's what kind of, in the UK, there was a club called Kinetic and a club called Helter Skelter, and it's where all the kids would go and take ecstasy and just go nuts.
So is it like EDM, essentially?
Yeah, it's like, but it's not even, I mean, it makes chain smokers, you know, look like John Lennon.
So you're 13, you're at a New Year's Eve party, and someone just randomly put on Say It Ain't So by Weezer?
Yeah.
And Radiohead's Creep?
Yeah.
So what was it about those songs that made you want to listen to them over and over again?
I don't know. I guess the sentiment, probably. I don't know. There was something about them that, you know, actually resonated with me as a person rather than just, you know, was catchy and made me want to dance. Yeah. I kind of became addicted to that world. But I'm a creep. I'm a little. What the hell am I doing here? I don't belong here. I don't care
if it. I was thinking about Say It Ain't So when I was thinking about this interview. So I'm a child of the 90s. I'm 41. So
yeah.
Say It, like, I loved that song. And only, like, last year understood what that song was about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I truly understand what that song is about anyway.
I think it's about some kind of relationship to alcohol.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, like some kind of complicated relationship to alcohol.
That would make sense with the bridge, yeah.
Yeah. Dear Daddy, I write to in spite of this silence. You cleaned up, found Jesus. Things are good.
One of the other reasons why we picked it was because we just finished the US tour with Weezer a few months ago, and it was like literally a dream come true to be able to see them perform that song every night.
And you, yeah, it was Weezer crazy. And the Pixies, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of an amazing tour.
Where Is My Mind is another similar song, or that, you know, Surfer Rosa, that whole album.
Describe what it was like seeing Weezer play these songs all the time. Did you ever get to meet them and hang out with them?
No, we hung out with the Pixies a lot. I think we got really friendly with them. They're amazing. But Weezer were a bit more aloof. Rivers was always kind of coming in late. Weirdly, he sent me an email, like, just saying, you know, sorry we didn't get to hang or whatever. So I think we might go and play golf when I get back to LA. Yeah, so we didn't really get to meet them, but the onstage, like, the show, I mean, they're just such a intriguing, and he's just, they're just such a weird band, aren't they? There's no kind of angst going on, you know, with the onstage antics, but there is in the music. It's kind of, it's an interesting dichotomy.
So I guess I haven't seen Weezer play live. So do they just kind of like stand there and play their instruments, but then like put out a thing?
Well, the guitarist stands there playing. He kind of looks pretty. The drummer does his thing. He's a bit ridiculous. The bass player does his thing, but then Rivers comes on in like a very preppy outfit. And then he was like, having stagehands like rip that outfit off, and then he'd have the football or baseball jersey of whatever town he was in underneath.
Like every different town he had a different
baseball
jersey.
Yeah, and then
jersey.
He'd like get a scooter and like ride it round the arena, and like then go and like sing Wonderwall or Toto. Crowd like way up. It was very like, it's very silly.
Yeah.
But then like, the, you know, What Say It Is, you know, that the Blue album and what that means to me doesn't not have anything to do with kind of how it's performed on stage or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's still amazing.
Do you think you learned anything from watching those guys play every night about performing live?
I mean, his voice was so good each night. I guess I kind of learned lots of boring technical stuff, but when us three are on stage, it's, you know, I don't think we're maybe the most natural stage people. It's like everything we do is just born out of fear and anxiety, so we just fucking run around the stage like maniacs. Whereas, you know, maybe having watched them and watched Pixie, it's like, okay, I am me, I can settle into this space and, like, do that.
Like just being more comfortable with
yeah.
just being
just
who
stand,
you are. Like,
I'll just stand and sing the songs.
Because that's
that?
What we're doing. Yeah. You don't have to rip my clothes off and put me
yeah.
on a scooter.
Yeah, exactly.
But I could do that.
I would like to do it. Well, the stage today is Metallica. We've got this perfect ego ramp. So if I can find a scooter, maybe I'll just do that.
There's too many scooters around here. Yeah. Too many douchey scooters. I'm sure you could find a scooter. So when you started, but at 13, were you writing your own music? Were you considering
yeah.
music? Yeah.
Writing terrible stuff, but yeah.
Were you writing happy hardcore songs?
No. Yeah, about 14, I probably started writing songs, I suppose. I was in lots of covers bands.
Did you cover Weezer?
Yeah.
Ah, right on. So, at what point did you decide you wanted to write your own music?
I think I was more in love with the idea of being in a band than I was with kind of composing great songs, I guess. The point that I really realized that I wanted to do it was when people started, you know, giving me positive reinforcement about the songs that I'd written. And then that was like, oh, actually, maybe I can do this. Maybe I'm all right. And then kind of took that from them.
I've met someone that makes me feel seasick. Oh, what a skill to have. Oh, what a skill to have. So many skills that make her distinctive. They're not mine to have. No, they're not mine. Whenever she looks, I read the nearest paper. Though I don't care about the soaps. No, I don't care about the soaps.
So really, you started out just wanting to, like, it doesn't matter what I play.
Pretty much, yeah. I just wanted to emulate Johnny Greenwood and Tom York for a long period of my life. I mean, I did a music degree in an arts college in Liverpool. It was like Paul McCartney's old school, which was about to be tore down, and he threw a load of money at it and turned it into this great kind of arts program. So I did a BA in music there. And yeah, there was one teacher who was a pretty successful writer, and he just, you know, showed me a lot of love from the word go and kind of gave me the encouragement to persist with it.
Paul McCartney headlined this festival, obviously. There was a huge deal for Austin. And you went to Paul McCartney's school, and he actually gave you, like, some songwriting advice, or, like, you had interactions with him.
Yeah, I met him a few times.
Yeah. So what's the coolest thing Paul McCartney ever taught you?
Even at, like, when I was, like, 23, I was, like, I'd say I get these fears that I'm never going to be able to write another song again. And he was like, you know, never think that you've shot your bolt. It's just, you know, nonsense in your head, and all writers kind of get it. And yeah, we just sat in a room for an hour and a half just talking shit, really. It was amazing.
You talked songwriting with Paul McCartney?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, it was so cool.
Yeah, so this new record that you guys are doing, it sounds like you kind of return to guitar songs, or like less synth driven stuff.
A little bit, yeah. The first album was, you know, I describe it as like a Yorkshire Terrier trying to rip your face off. It's just scrappy, all recorded live. You know, it was successful for us in the UK and Europe, and then there was this tons of pressure on the second album from our label, and then I think we just got kind of bored of, you know, writing on guitar, so that's where all the synths came in. And then the third album, we didn't really think about a direction, so the third album's kind of like just taking the second album a bit more. And then on this one, I was like, well, what do we do now? I don't think we're going to do a jam band album or a banjo album. So I was just like, I want to do something that is very organic and doesn't rely on production wizardry, where it's all kind of tastefully done, something that I could listen to in 10 years' time. I think one of the reasons this album seems to be connecting with people a lot more is because I didn't overthink it. I wasn't like, shit, is this gonna be a hit or whatever. It was just like, there's just 11 songs, and ironically they are probably better radio songs than some of the ones in the past
without you really trying to make them. So
I push and you tend to shove. I give in and you don't give up.
To a knife fight from the Wombats' new record, Beautiful People Will Ruin Your Life. They actually did a very cool stripped-down version of this song for KTX. We do these pop-up sessions backstage at ACL Fest, and you can find a video of that on the show notes page for this episode at KUTX.org, along with a link to their new record, so you can, like, get into the Wombats. And as always, you'll be able to find a Spotify playlist on the show notes page, so you can listen to all the songs we referenced in this episode, all the way through. And that's it. You've come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9 in Austin, Texas. This episode was produced by me, Elizabeth McQueen, and the interview was edited by Nadia Hamdan. She is such a good editor. Thanks to Deidre Gott and Peter Babb and Todd Callahan for all they do for this podcast. And it is true. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own Hard Proof. Right on. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.